Hello, I'm Christine, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 22nd of January, 2025. Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD. Simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have myself, Christine, Angela, Ian, Mohammed, Mina, Simon, and of course, not forgetting, Roger. In this week's edition, we have the latest Beacon update with Mohammed, with news on road closures, new developments, and some forthcoming events. We have the latest news from the Black Country. We have some more interesting facts with Roger's quiz. We have all the reaction to the weekend's football action for Wolves and West Brom. With the weather remaining settled, hopefully it'll be more of the same with a sprinkling of sunshine from Mina for the week ahead. And we have some healthy tips for the new year to help you take care of your eyes, as well as a focus on some common eye conditions, the support available, and research into new medical treatments. Local news to start though, with myself, Christine, Ian and Liz. But first, Angela.
The total cost of repairing vehicles damaged by potholes hit a record high last year. Common problems caused by potholes include damaged shock absorbers, broken suspension springs, and distorted wheels. The AA said the total cost of fixing vehicles it attended in the UK, which had broken down because of poor road surfaces in 2024, was £579 million. That is compared with £474 million during the previous 12 months and is the highest total on record. The government last month announced an extra £60 million of funding to fill potholes and repair roads across the Back Country and wider West Midlands region. It comes as part of a record £1.6 billion government investment across England, an increase of nearly 50% on road maintenance funding from last year. The West Midlands will receive over £52 million worth of funding for the years 2025-26 to add to the already allocated £119 million, while Shropshire will be allocated a £9 million boost towards the already allocated £24.5 million, bringing a combined total of over £204 million. Figures from the RAC show drivers encounter an average of 6 potholes per mile in England and Wales, and the cost of pothole damage to vehicles is around £500 on average, with more severe repairs costing considerably more. According to the AA, fixing potholes is a priority for 96% of drivers, and road users in the West Midlands are also being encouraged to report potholes in their area to their local council through a dedicated gov.uk page. Each local authority will be able to use the money to target problem areas. It can use its share of the total £1.6 billion pot for 2025-26 to identify which of their roads are in the most need of repair and to deliver immediate fixes for communities and raise living standards across every area of the country. Richard Parker, Mayor of the West Midlands, said, "A lack of funding has left our region's roads in an embarrassing state, cratered with dangerously deep potholes and leaving road users to pay the price for broken promises. Securing this extra government funding directly to our local councils means they'll finally have the funding to be able to deal with the problem, fixing more roads and pavements to make journeys better."
and a road leading into Wolverhampton city centre is said to be closed throughout the first half of the year as works begin. Motorists heading into Wolverhampton will be unable to enter the city centre via Darlington Street until July, as the road will be closed to traffic in both directions between Waterloo Road and Chapel Ash Island. Wolverhampton Council put out a message to say that the works, which began at 7 a.m. on January the 20th, are due to city centre public realm improvements, and explained that both vehicle and cycle access was closed. The message said, "Whereas Wolverhampton Council, being the highway authority for Darlington Street, are satisfied that traffic should be restricted because works are being or are proposed to be executed on or near the road, namely to allow city centre public realm improvements. Now, therefore, the Council, in exercise of their powers under Section 14, brackets 1, brackets A, of the Road Traffic Regulation Act 1984, as substituted by the Road Traffic Temporary Restrictions Act 1991, and all other enabling powers, do hereby make the following order. No person shall cause any vehicle to proceed on Darlington Street in both directions between its junctions with Ring Road, Chapel Ash Island, and Waterloo Road, School Street. Darlington Street Cycle Lane, also closed between the junctions of Ring Road, Chapel Ash Island, and Red Lion Street. National Express West Midlands also alerted travellers that due to the closure of the road, a number of bus services would be diverted. A spokesman for National Express West Midlands said, "From Sunday, January the 19th, Darlington Street will be closed between Waterloo Road and Chapel Ash Island for approximately 6 months. During this time, services 1, 3, 4, 10, 10A and 7-11 will be diverted."
And a formal consultation on a proposal to move the region's bus network to a franchise model from the current private operator-led deregulated system was launched last week. And members of the West Midlands Combined Authorities, WMCA, Transport Delivery Overview and Scrutiny Committee, were told 388 people had already given their views in just 1 week. The consultation, which started on January 6th, will run until March 30th, and it is hoped thousands of passengers, residents, businesses and organisations will take part. This will take place through an online consultation, peer-to-peer researchers speaking to certain groups, school and college toolkits for 16 to 19-year-olds, public events, street surveys and direct engagement with bus operators and statutory consultees. Shortly after his election in May last year, Mayor Richard Parker outlined his vision for bus reform, saying moving to a franchise model would give Transport for West Midlands more control over fares, routes and timetables. WMCA currently provides an annual subsidy of around £50 million to private operators, but this has failed to stop fare increases and service reduction. If the model is implemented, bus operators will be able to bid for contracts to run services across the region. It will cost WMCA £22.5 million over 3 years to move from a deregulated network to a franchise. Mr. Parker said 80% of all public transport users in the West Midlands are bus passengers. The decision to move to the consultation was taken in December, but some WMCA board members said that while they agree the current system needs reforming, they wanted to understand all the risks associated with the franchise model. In response, Mr. Parker said, "We're only doing this for one reason, and that is to improve services to our residents and the connectivity they can benefit from. 80% of those who are using public transport use the bus network, and the bus network is currently failing too many people. There are many hurdles we need to jump yet, and this is the start of the process and not the finish. People will be able to take part in the online consultation by visiting the Transport for West Midlands website at www.tfwm.org.uk/consultations bus.com/bus-reform/.
Up next, we have the Beacon update brought to us by Mohammed.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Beacon update for the 22nd of January, 2025. My name is Mohammed, and we have a lot of exciting updates this week, so let's get straight into it. Sonia Kumar MP visits Beacon. A huge thank you to Dudley's MP, Sonia Kumar, for her recent visit to the Beacon Centre for the Blind as we get our 150th birthday celebrations underway. During her visit to our Sedgley site, the MP had the chance to meet our incredible staff and hear firsthand about the vital work we do supporting people living with sight loss. With over 37,000 people affected by sight conditions in our area, our mission remains as strong as ever to create a society where sight is valued and visual impairment doesn't limit opportunities. Here's to making 2025 a year to remember as we continue to help people live well with sight loss. 150th fundraising pack. Calling all supporters. We're excited to announce the launch of our 150th anniversary fundraising pack. This comprehensive resource is packed with everything you need to help us ensure people can live well with sight loss in our landmark year. What's included in the pack? Creative fundraising ideas, our history, and much more. By downloading this pack, you'll be helping us make a difference in the lives of people living with sight loss. Download your copy today. https://beaconvision.org/150-2025. Please share this pack with friends and family to help us spread the word. Elvis's 90th birthday. Our fabulous members have recently been celebrating what would have been Elvis's 90th birthday in style by crafting their very own dazzling guitars. And let's just say they've hit all the right notes, even if the guitars don't actually play yet. The king would have been proud. Thank you, Third Sedgley Brownies. What an amazing thank you we have recently received from the Third Sedgley Brownies. Barry, our IT and assistive technology trainer, recently attended a meeting to talk about his sight loss journey and to describe how people living with sight loss can live more independently. They were so inspired that they created a beautiful Braille poster to express their thanks. Thank you, Third Sedgley Brownies, for your inspiring artwork. 150th pin badge. We are celebrating 150 years of Beacon with a special limited edition pin badge. We recently held a competition for Beacon staff to design the perfect badge to commemorate this milestone. We were blown away by the creativity and talent on display. And we're thrilled to announce that a member of our retail team has won. The winning design will be available to buy in all of our charity shops and reception at our Sedgley Centre in the next few weeks. Community Activity Programme. This week in Beacon's Community Activity Programme, we have the following. On Tuesday, the 21st of January, we held a gym competition. In the gym, we had a reaction wall where you hit the lights that are on and create a score. Members went head to head and the person with the highest score received a prize. 10-pin bowling. On Friday, the 24th of January, leaving Beacon at 10:30 a.m. For the full schedule for January, please visit beaconvision.org/what-on-january-2025 or call us on 019-02-880-111. That's everything for this week. Join us again next week where we'll have more updates from across the charity.
Thanks for that update, Mohammed. Next up, we have another block of local news. And up first, we hear from Christine.
Wolverhampton is making strong, accelerated progress to further improve services for children and young people with special educational needs and disabilities. That is the finding of the most recent review meeting between the city's SEND Partnership Board, the Department for Education, DfE, and the Care Quality Commission, which concluded that the city continues to make sustainable progress and that this work is having a positive impact. It follows a local area review of SEND services, which looked at how well partners, including the City of Wolverhampton Council, the Black Country Integrated Care Board, the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust, the Black Country Healthcare NHS Foundation Trust, early years settings, schools and further education providers identify, assess and meet the needs of children and young people with SEND. It highlighted a number of areas of good practice and those which require further development, and a written statement of action was produced to outline the steps that would be taken by partners to further improve SEND services in the city. The review meeting, the latest in a series of regular progress checks, found that clear and sustained progress had been made in addressing two key areas: identifying school-aged children and young people with SEND and arrangements for jointly commissioning and providing services, meaning these will no longer be monitored going forward. Two other areas relating to co-production and transitions were similarly closed off at the previous review meeting. The DfE and NHS England will continue to monitor the remaining two areas for improvement. Naomi Sharp, the head of the DfE's West Midlands Vulnerable Children's Unit, said, "I know this positive outcome is as a result of a great deal of commitment and hard work on the part of the local authority, the Integrated Care Board, families and frontline staff across education, health and social care. I would like to thank you for all that you are doing to support some of the most vulnerable children and young people in society and to congratulate you on the progress you have made." Councillor Jackie Coogan, the City of Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Children, Young People and Education, said, "We want to ensure all our children, and particularly those with special educational needs and disabilities, get the very best possible start in life. And the Council and our partners are working round the clock to ensure this is the case. This latest review meeting has confirmed that the City is making excellent progress in improving SEND support and that this is having a positive impact on children, young people and their families, despite a backdrop of much increased demand for services. We know there is still more to do, and as a system, we will continue to work at pace to deliver the high standards our families with SEND both expect and deserve."
Now then, if you've started the new year with a technology upgrade, don't forget you can donate any old and unused devices to Wolves Tech Aid. The initiative, led by City of Wolverhampton Council, accepts laptops, tablets, mobile phones and desktop computers and puts them back into use for school pupils and others in the community. Donating is easy. Just drop devices off with staff at any library in the city. All personal data is wiped before donated kit is redistributed. More than 1,600 devices have been recycled by Wolves Tech Aid since the not-for-profit project began in 2021. With about 900 given to over 17 city schools. The Council also works with its Digital Wolves network of trusted partners to support those in the community who do not have access to technology. City of Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Digital and Community, Councillor Obaida Ahmed, said, "Wolves Tech Aid plays an important part in ensuring everyone in Wolverhampton can benefit from technology and the connectivity to get online and improve their lives. Don't let your old devices sit gathering dust in a drawer. Hand them in at your nearest library, and we will make sure they are quickly put to good use in schools and the wider community. I am appealing for residents and businesses. who have computers or any other devices they are thinking of throwing away, to donate to Wolves Tech Aid and help us bridge the digital divide. Winston Lindsay is an independent well-being social worker at ARC Training, part of the Digital Wolves Network, which connects people with educational and training opportunities. He said, Wolves Tech Aid is a transformative initiative which has enabled us to support more than 50 people so far. We have had those experiencing isolation and, due to the rising cost of living, unable to buy their own laptop or device, but Tech Aid has helped to revolutionize their lives. They are now able to communicate effectively with others and access online information and resources. Devices do not have to be in pristine condition. Even if they cannot be recycled, Wolves Tech Aid can use parts to refurbish other devices. Find your nearest library at findyournearestlibrary.com/cityofwolverhampton council. Those who would like to donate their old and redundant devices can also contact digitalwolves@wolverhampton.gov.uk. To find out more about the initiative, visit Wolves Tech Aid.
Time now to swap all that tech for memories of joyful nostalgia. As if you played with Lego sets as a child, you'll fondly remember the endless fun and creativity old favourites like Lego can bring. Even if the sets weren't exactly yours and you sort of borrowed them from your siblings. Well, young creators are now being invited to enter the very first Global Mini Master Model Builders competition at Legoland's Discovery Centres, including Birmingham, and be in with a chance of winning the international title. From Saturday, January 25th to Sunday, February 2nd, Legoland Discovery Centres around the globe will open their doors to young aspiring builders, and at the Birmingham location, children can enter the free competition to showcase their building skills. Participants are invited to demonstrate their imagination and creativity by constructing something extraordinary that will leave the judges in awe. This year, judges are particularly interested in an array of building techniques and a strong creative flair, so entrants should think outside the box and let their personality and interests shine through. To provide inspiration, the 2024 winner utilised various building techniques and a diverse range of pieces to create a detailed butterfly. In contrast, a previous year's winner incorporated an interactive feature, a TV with a rotating screen that allowed viewers to change the channel. Finalists will be chosen by the Legoland Master Model Builders and Playmakers. Each Discovery Centre will then crown its own Mini Master Model Builder. The Mini Master Model Builder of Birmingham will even have the unique opportunity of having their creation displayed at the iconic Lego House in Denmark, plus a prize of £100 to spend in the Legoland store and a local annual pass for them and their family. The winning Mini Master Model Builder will work with the local Master Model Builder to create their final models, which will compete in the global final. Those looking to develop their building skills can also attend the Lego Creativity Academy to pick up some exclusive Lego tips and tricks from Legoland Discovery Centre's Master Model Builders themselves. Throughout the day, there are also talks and sessions with the playmakers. Legoland Discovery Centre Master Model Builder, Birmingham, Michelle Oakes, said, "With the excitement of Christmas now behind us, we are thrilled to add a touch of magic to the start of 2025 with the launch of our first Global Mini Master Model Builder competition. This event invites children to let their imaginations run wild and showcase their creativity and personalities. We have many small but mighty innovators and we encourage all Lego enthusiasts to come and participate. This is a unique opportunity to compete against other Lego lovers from around the world and be crowned the Mini Master. Those that want to enter should head to Legoland Discovery Centre in Birmingham on January the 25th, 26th and February the 1st and 2nd to take part. For more information on the competition, please visit Legoland Discovery Centre. Now it's time to test your knowledge, as we have the quiz questions for this edition. Take it away, Roger.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK. Time now for another of our quizzes. I hope you enjoy this one. It's Roger Brooks here with this one. Okay, question one. Joe Biden is the second Catholic president of the United States. Who was the first Catholic president? Question two. In what year was the film Grease released? You're the One That I Want, etc. Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta. That was when? Question three. What's the Swedish currency? What do you have to spend in Sweden? Question four. Geoffrey Chaucer, the author, is buried in Poets' Corner. Poets' Corner. But where is Poets' Corner? Question five. Even if you don't follow football, you'll have heard the name Juventus many times. But like many teams abroad, they don't actually mention the city that they're from. So where is the footballing giant club Juventus based? Question six. Who wrote the William Tell Overture? Question seven. In what year was our future king, Prince William, born? What year was William born in? And finally, question eight. Who was the female star with Gary Cooper in the film High Noon? Back with the answers later.
TNS Soundings.
Cheers for those questions, Roger. I'll get my mind working on them. Up now, however, is another block of local news. As we start the new year, many of us are focusing on diet, exercise, healthy living and our general well-being. But did you know that these healthy habits can also benefit our eyes? Sight is considered the most vital sense by most people, so it's important to do all we can to ensure our vision is as good as possible, and vitally that we keep check on the health of our eyes to detect any issues early. Mr. Amir Hamid, Chief Medical Officer and Ophthalmic Surgeon from Optegra Eye Healthcare, which has a hospital in the West Midlands, offers the following tips to help you take care of your eyes over the coming year. New Year is often a time to review what we eat and drink. The good news for our vision is that we can eat well to see well. A balanced diet with plenty of coloured vegetables and oily fish can really benefit eye health. The antioxidant properties of vitamin C found in peppers, tomatoes and strawberries can delay the onset of cataract and age-related macular degeneration, while salmon contains omega-3, which can help prevent dry eyes. If one of your New Year's resolutions is to get fitter, then that's great news for your eyes, as staying active can also help your vision. Low-impact exercise can help to reduce eye pressure, which is a major factor in glaucoma, and exercise helps to relax our facial muscles and reduce eye strain. Remember to wear protective eyewear when playing fast racket sports, especially badminton and squash. We are all relying on tech much more, and while it has so many advantages to make life easier, it can be detrimental to our eyes. Staring too long at screens, we tend to forget to blink as often as we should, which can cause dry eyes and irritation and even eye strain. To manage this, take regular breaks from screens, especially mobile phones and computers. It is best to use the 20-20-20 technique. Every 20 minutes, look 20 feet into the distance for 20 seconds to help your eyes adjust and refocus. Book regular eye health checks. The NHS recommends every 2 years. If it's been a while, book yourself in with your local optician. This is one of the most important steps you can take. Not only can your optician help you ensure you can see as well as possible, perhaps with the support of glasses, contact lenses, or vision correction treatment, but essentially, the eye test checks the health of your eye. Many sight-threatening conditions, such as glaucoma and age-related macular degeneration, have no symptoms in their early stages. And yet, the best chance of successful treatment to save sight is to start treatment as quickly as possible. The eye test will check the back of the eye and help detect these conditions early. Take note of any changes in your vision. Cataract, which affects 1 in 3 adults, for example, can make colours appear faded, can cause blurry vision, and many people notice glare from bright lights when driving. There's only one option for treatment, which is to have the cataract removed in a fast and pain-free procedure, where the clouded lens, which is mainly caused by aging, is replaced with a synthetic lens. The op is life-changing as it restores bright, clear vision, so speak to your local optician if you notice any of these symptoms. There will be many of us who, if not ourselves, know of someone who has been diagnosed with the eye condition glaucoma. With this month being Glaucoma Awareness Month, news has been released of a £1.18 million study aimed at helping to improve diagnosis of the eye condition that can lead to sight loss. Glaucoma, which involves damage to the optic nerve, is the world's leading cause of irreversible blindness and affects 3% of people over 40 in the UK, according to the University of Bradford, where the study is due to be carried out. Diagnosis of the condition is currently made by looking at the thinning of retinal tissue, but the Bradford study would use 3D images to get a more accurate picture, a spokesperson said. Dr. Jonathan Dennis from the university said, "Glaucoma diagnosis is difficult and misidentification of healthy eyes as glaucoma is common, costing the NHS over £36 million a year. In addition, current techniques also miss 20 to 30% of true cases, contributing to preventable sight loss," he added. Dr. Dennis, an associate professor in the School of Optometry and Vision Science at the University of Bradford, said a reduction in the number of false positives of just 5% would mean a saving of about £1 million a year for the NHS. Dr. Jonathan Dennis says, if successful, the study could save the NHS millions of pounds. While existing diagnostic imaging for glaucoma used a process called optical coherence tomography, which was fast, non-invasive, and straightforward to use, effective treatment required accurate early diagnosis, and current detection rates could be improved. When the technique was tested on a small group of patients, it detected more early defects than existing approaches, he said. It also showed potential to reduce false positives, which means fewer people being referred for treatment unnecessarily. The 4-year study starting in April, funded by the Medical Research Council, will be supported by Dr. Riccardo Celloni, who carried out the initial work on the new technique during his PhD studies at the University of Bradford. Glaucoma affects about 60 million people around the world, and most have lost a third of their vision by the time they are diagnosed. The disease is usually caused by changes to the pressure inside the eye that kills the retina's nerve cells. As these cells become stressed and sickly, they start to change their chemistry and more fatty structures move to the outsides of the cell. Now, along with glaucoma, macular diseases are one of the biggest causes of sight loss. With thanks to Soundings contributors Jill and Bob, we now hear about some of the latest research underway to treat macular problems and slow their advance, as well as the help and support available for people affected.
Hi, I'm Bob Baker.
And I'm Jill Hardiker.
And together we are Sound and Vision,
bringing you the best information, technology and interviews for the visually impaired and those supporting them.
This podcast is all about macular disease. Nearly 1.5 million people in the UK have macular disease, and it affects people of all ages.
Age-related macular degeneration, or AMD, is the most common condition, generally affecting people over the age of 55. AMD is the biggest cause of sight loss in the UK, affecting more than 700,000 people.
Wow, that's a lot of people, isn't it?
It's a lot of people.
Yeah. A group of rare inherited conditions called macular dystrophies can affect much younger people. Some of these rare conditions can appear in childhood, although some are not diagnosed until later life.
We chatted to Carl Harrison, who is the North West England Regional Manager for the Macular Society, and here he explains about the diagnosis of his macular condition.
I have what's known as a macular dystrophy. It's a genetic condition and the name is Stargardt's, and that affects my central vision. You do learn to adapt. I think in the very early days, I think just as much emotionally as well as physically, because there's a lot of information to take in, to absorb and to make sense of. Lots of anxieties, lots of fears and lots of practical challenges. It could be something simple yet devastating as losing your driving license, for example. I recall on the day of finally being told, after many years of tests, I drove to Preston Hospital. My wife was with me. She was 8 months pregnant at the time with our first daughter. Drove to the hospital, had some routine tests, which I'd had many, many times before. And at the end of the tests, the ophthalmologist just asked how I was going to get home. So I said, well, I've driven here. I'm driving home. And he said, no, you're not. That's it. You need to surrender your license. So my reaction, of course, was, you know, you can't do that to me. My job involves traveling around the country doing safety inspections. If you take my driving license off me, then effectively I'm out of work.
That must have been absolutely devastating.
Mm, I can't even imagine it.
No.
But as Carl went on to explain, not everyone's journey with macula is the same.
Our experiences are not identical. Everybody is individual and we will have similar experiences, but we'll also have completely different experiences. And it's how you react to it. It's how you respond to it. And again, we're all different in that regard. It depends on the support you have around you from right at the early stage and ongoing. It still saddens me today to hear people who are recently diagnosed, whatever their age, that they're diagnosed and that's the end of it. I mean, that was my experience. And I know there's a lot of work taking place now and relationships and partnerships are now developing through lots of different organizations. They're an absolute vital resource, absolutely vital. But of course, you know, we need to understand that sometimes, myself included in the early days, sometimes you don't want that help from those organizations. You know, I'm young, I'm proud and I'm self-sufficient. And if I take that, then no, I'm not. And it took me, I have to confess, it took me a long time to come to terms and even agreeing to becoming registered for the Certificate of Vision Impairment, because I was fearful. I knew that if I were to register, I knew that help would be available, but I was fearful that registering would close more doors than it opened for me at that age. It takes time to realize, actually, you do have an issue here. You've been told you have sight impairment, but you know, before I was told yesterday, the day before that, I was fine. Now I've been told I'm different. Actually, I'm not. And I do think, especially maybe in the younger people where you are far more active and there's lots going on in your life and so on, I think just that realization, yes, that there is a significant, serious issue here. Well, it isn't causing me too much inconvenience at this moment in time. And if I do register, then that's just like putting a flag up. So I've got a vision impairment. And I didn't want that because I still had a career to carve out and years in front of me. But then as you eventually come to terms in your time, in your way, you start to realize, well, this isn't getting better. You start to learn that there is help available. And it just takes one of those moments where actually I could do with one of those for my job. And well, you can have one. Great. But you need to register.
As Carl suggests in this next piece, there is always a way forward.
Understand if it's something like Stargardt's, then it's unlikely you're going to lose the whole of your vision. Yes, it's going to worsen. That isn't nice to hear, but it's important to understand because once you've heard it and you do come to terms with it, at least you're prepared in that sense. So I would say that you're not going to lose your sight if it's Stargardt's, and plan.
Up next, let's have another block of local news.
The new West Midlands Fire Service Chief says he will be aiming to build on the exceptional work of the Brigade as he embarks on a tour of fire stations across the region. Chief Fire Officer Simon Toohill was appointed 2 months ago after what he described as a challenging and turbulent 12 months for the emergency service and has been touring departments to meet colleagues. He is the third person to be announced as head of the fire in the space of 12 months. And the West Midlands Fire Chief also spoke out on the dangers of lithium-ion batteries following a series of local incidents. Firefighters have fought dozens of blazes involving lithium-ion products, including at scrapyards and recycling centres across the West Midlands. Between April 2022 and April 2023, West Midlands Fire Service tackled a total of 26 incidents at scrapyards and recycling centres, with recent weeks seeing at least four more incidents across the Black Country, including in Smethwick and Aldridge. The Brigade's Station Commander for Investigation and Fire Prevention, Matt Ling, explained, "Any lithium battery, be it vapes, scooter or mobile phone batteries, will react if it's damaged and introduced into the general waste systems. We have had instances of this type of fire in the West Midlands in recent months. The issue is that when lithium-ion batteries are wrongly recycled, they can suffer damage through piercing or bending, and then they go into what we call thermal runaway, which is a sudden intense heat over a short amount of time. Because of where these fires happen, the fire is often surrounded by other flammable materials such as food waste and cardboard. That is where we have been getting these large fires we have been seeing over the last few months. While fighting a lithium-ion battery fire can be similar to battling a regular non-battery fire, the fire service said there's an extra risk due to toxic fumes, flammable gases expelled by lithium cells, and possible reignition. Commander Ling added, "There isn't a major change in the way we handle these fires, but the operational tactics often differ because of the evolution of the fire. These types of fire generally expel a number of flammable but also toxic gases. These can also cause an explosive atmosphere, which is dangerous to our personnel and also any members of the community that are in the nearby area. It means that we can see a very rapid fire spread over a wider area, leading to a very difficult circumstance that often requires a lot of water and added resources. We also have the additional hazard that once they have been on fire, they can, without notice, reignite. So again, it can mean an increase in fire service resources to handle that potential reignition. The increase in fires comes as it was announced that lithium-ion battery-fueled single-use vape devices will be banned from the 1st of June, possibly meaning a short-term increase in the number of vapes ending up in our bins. Any lithium-ion battery that is introduced into the normal waste recycling system poses a potential risk. Any of these products has the potential to react the same way if it's damaged and introduced into the waste system without going through the proper disposal procedures. When these batteries are damaged or involved in a fire, they go into thermal runaway, which is the rapid generation of intense heat over a short amount of time. West Midlands Fire Service has also released advice on safely storing and disposing of lithium-ion battery products in our home, saying the first line of defence is always working smoke alarms. First of all, with any property that someone lives in or works in, always having working smoke alarms, that is your first line of defence in an incident. In terms of e-bikes, make sure they are always charged and never in a fire escape route, and always use the charger that is designated for that battery. Don't swap batteries and always buy from a reputable dealer. If you're buying an unregulated battery or bike conversion kit, the risk of fire goes up exponentially. We would ask everyone to utilize local waste recycling centers for their batteries. They have specific qualities for the safe disposal of the batteries, or alternatively, at the supermarkets in the area as they are required to have safe disposal centers," he added. The figures relating to the incidents in 2024 are being collated.
A brand new air ambulance purchased at a cost of £9 million was called out to 10 incidents across the West Midlands region in its first week of service. The Midlands Air Ambulance Charity's brand new H145 helicopter, which carries the registration GHMAA, went into service on January the 1st, with a crew helping a number of patients who were in cardiac arrest and one patient who had a serious fall. In its first week of operations, the crew, comprising an experienced pilot and two critical care paramedics, were called out to help patients across the West Midlands, Staffordshire, Shropshire and Worcestershire. The new spacious five-blade air ambulance is the charity's third wholly owned helicopter and has replaced the organisation's last leased aircraft from Babcock International Group. It is based at the charity's Tatton Hill Air Base near Burton-on-Trent in Staffordshire, and the advanced clinical crew will be dispatched daily to patients who need enhanced care rapidly on scene before being taken to hospital. Midland Air Ambulance Charity critical care paramedic Alistair McNeil, who was on duty when the new helicopter came into service, said, "It was an honour to be on shift on our new helicopter's first day of operation, and we are already seeing the benefit of the new aircraft. The larger interior and even smoother flight due to the aircraft having five blades will aid our ability to give patients the best treatment during their onward transfer to hospital. The new H145 has been funded through careful financial planning, support from the communities and businesses within the region, and two generous grant-giving organisations, Denise Coates Foundation and the Kildare Trust."
West Midlands Police is using the latest artificial intelligence, AI technology, to fast-track the most vulnerable people who call the force's non-emergency number asking for help. The force has updated its technology to unlock the power of AI to ensure vulnerable callers using the 101 system get through immediately to staff. All non-emergency calls are now analysed, the force said, and those at risk of domestic violence or of harming themselves or reports of missing children are helped more quickly as a result of the new system, which aims to provide help and support to those who need it most. As well as identifying vulnerable people needing support, the system messages investigators with requests for updates from victims once the crime number and other personal details have been verified. It gives advice about lost and found property, transfers calls to custody, and signposts people to organisations responsible for things like abandoned cars or noise nuisance. It also allows people to switch to using the force website to make online crime reports. A West Midlands police spokesman said, "Our force contact are one of the top performing police contact centres in the UK. On average, we answer 999 calls within 10 seconds and 101 calls within 21 seconds. Each year, Force Contact answers 750,000 999 calls and 730,000 101 calls. They also receive 80,000 web chats and online reports. They are able to resolve around 70% of queries at the first point of contact, allowing officers to focus on investigating crimes and supporting victims." They added that latest data for December shows the force answered 96.7% of its 58,999 calls in less than 10 seconds, with an average answer time of 5.8 seconds. And 99% of its 55,101 calls in an average of about 8 seconds. Assistant Chief Constable Matt Wellstead, who is responsible for WMP's Force Contact, said, "Our figures show we are on the right track when it comes to delivering the best service possible to the public. Using AI technology is helping us to further improve how we answer and deal with calls round the clock." Chief Superintendent Ian Parnell, head of Force Contact, said, "Alongside our fantastic staff who answer calls for service, we have invested in cutting-edge technology, better understanding the purpose of 101 calls, and signposting callers to the right solution to meet their need. This ensures we provide an outstanding service to people, even during the busiest periods."
Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us, brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own Sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, it's Mina here. And after a relatively dry spell of weather, it does look as though we may find ourselves reaching for our brollies and raincoats this week as it turns more unsettled. But thankfully, temperatures shall remain mild for the week ahead too. The sunrise and sunset times are 7:55 a.m. for the sunrise and 4:50 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 24th of January, temperatures will remain comfortably at 9 degrees, but it is looking as though it will be a wet and potentially wild day, as there is a chance of strong gusts sweeping in from the southwest, bringing with it winds of up to 40 miles per hour. So do keep listening out for any further weather reports on your local media, be it TV, radio, smart speaker or online. Thankfully, it's looking very much like the winds will calm right down as we move on into the weekend, but it will remain unsettled with sunshine and showers expected for Saturday 25th and Sunday 26th of January. Temperatures should continue to hold up well at 8 degrees. The rain looks like it's going to stay with us as we move into next week, with showers expected from Monday 20th of January and continuing right through to Thursday 23rd of January. However, these should begin to be less frequent and fizzle out by the time we get to the end of the week, allowing for some dry sunny spells to dominate. Temperatures will continue to remain at around average for this time of year at 10 degrees. Well, there we have it, a rare, sunny, cheery end to the forecast. Do take care, have a wonderful week, and enjoy the weather.
Cheers for that weather update, Mina. Now it's time to find out how our local football teams have been getting on.
Tony Mowbray made an emotional return to Albion and watched on as his side came from behind to earn a point against Stoke City. Mowbray was unveiled to a superb welcome from the Albion fans before kickoff, but Stoke threatened to spoil the party as returning Walsall loanee Nathan Lowe put them into an early lead. But Albion created a number of chances before Grady Diangana's classy, flicked finish earned them a point. But overall, Mowbray will be pleased and will no doubt just be eager to get himself back in the dugout to put his stamp on this Albion side. That clearly has more gears to go through. Now then, talking of gears, many of a Wolves persuasion will be hoping that they put the pedal to the metal and steer themselves clear of the relegation zone. Did Vita Pereira and his Wolves get back to winning ways in the capital? Let's head over to our fan zone feature to find out how Wolves fared down at Stamford Bridge against a high-flying Chelsea.
Jamie, the Wolves fan, after watching Chelsea 3, Wolverhampton Wanderers 1, embarrassing, to be honest. I felt it was an embarrassing performance because there was a time when we used to play against these teams and all of a sudden we can't play against them. We can't play against anyone. For a season ticket holder in Molineux, it's cost £107 per point so far this season, and it's just an embarrassing season. And you know, okay, people will say it's Chelsea, but yeah, it is Chelsea, but everybody has to play these teams and they have to play them twice, where you can easily put up some fight. And I didn't feel there was any fight tonight. I'm just beginning to make realisation that it is a real fight against relegation. I think we're in trouble. We're in deep trouble. And we need to get out of this mess as soon as possible. But do you know what? After tonight's performance, I can't see it getting out of it at all. Anyway, thank you very much. Bye. Speak to you next week.
Up next, let's have another block of local news.
You may or may not know that the 25th of January is also known as Burns Night. Burns Night is one of the most important dates in the Scottish calendar, when Scotland commemorates the life and works of their national bard, Robert Burns. From large, lavish banquets to informal laid-back suppers, the celebrations are synonymous with hearty recitals of Burns' poetry, haggis with neeps and tatties, loud bagpipes, and most certainly lots of whiskey. If you fancy cooking up your own Burns Night Storm and give it a Black Country twist, then we have you covered. As the owner of Essiting Farm is getting ready to put on his annual Black Country address to the haggis and the life of Robert Burns. The annual Black Country Burns Night event at the farm on Friday the 24th of January will see Richard Simkin welcome in guests for a four-course meal, a glass of whiskey, and an opportunity to celebrate the life and poetry of the Scottish poet Robert Burns. It will also give Mr. Simkin the chance to give his traditional reading of the Robert Burns poem Addressed to a Haggis in a Black Country dialect. He said that the translated version had come about after going to Burns Night events in the past and struggling to understand the reading of the poem, which is written in the Scots language. He said, "When I was going out with my wife, her parents were members of the Caledonian Society in Wolverhampton, and the highlight of the social calendar was the Burns dinner every January. I would go to these events and I would never understand a single word of the address to the Haggis. So after we got married and sitting at home on a cold winter's night, I got out a copy of the address and translated it into the Black Country dialect. It became a party piece, and then when we opened our tea room and started having Burns Night events about 15 years ago, it just seemed like the perfect opportunity to give the event a special cultural flavour. And so I started doing the address every year, and it's become a tradition. The event features a march with the Haggis, which is made at the farm to bagpipe music, then the address read by Mr. Simkin, and also it has a menu full of Scottish favourites, such as Scotch broth and raspberry kraken. Mr. Simkin said the event was always popular, with the timing of it being a month after Christmas, and said he was still thrilled to be able to run the event after so many years. He said, "It's great fun and we get a lot of people coming back year after year after year, with one of our regulars saying that he had come so many times he could almost remember the address off by heart. It's also great because it's not as formal as a traditional Burns Night event, as we don't do all the addresses and toasts to the memory of Robbie Burns, which is nice, but can also be interminable. I think it's just the right time after Christmas, as everyone has had the feast and used all the leftovers and had a few nights in and think to themselves that they'd like to do something nice again. Tickets are still available for the event on January the 24th at £36.95 each, with doors opening at 6:45pm for a 7:15pm start. To book a place, either go to the tea room in Essington Farm or call 01902 735 724.
And did you know the tradition of the Burns Supper started all the way back in 1801 when nine men who knew Robert Burns met for dinner of a fat haggis to celebrate his life and works? They had such a good time drinking whiskey and reciting his poems, they agreed to do it again the following year. And so the tradition began to celebrate the People's Poet of Scotland. Whether you love it or fear it, haggis is the most important part of a Burns dinner. But haggis isn't originally Scottish. It is widely agreed that the recipe or method of making haggis can be traced back to ancient Romans. To make their meat last longer, they would pack an animal's perishable offal into his stomach and boil it. A dish not for the faint-hearted. Burns turned this humble dish into a Scottish icon with his poem Addressed to a Haggis. On Burns Night, they joke that haggis is a wild little animal that hobbles around the Scottish Highlands. Perhaps a nicer image than that of a sheep's stomach containing sheep's pluck. McSween, award-winning producer of haggis, describes its haggis as containing simply lamb, beef, oats, onions and spices. Nothing more, nothing less. They even produce Haggis in a Hurry, which surprisingly is a microwavable haggis to enjoy at any time, and a vegetarian haggis that is also delicious. Neeps and tatties means turnips and potatoes, but not turnips as the English know them. Confused? Well, neep refers to a Swedish turnip, which is known as a Swede in England. These days, though, haggis is often accompanied by a wide variety of root vegetables. It is believed that Robert Burns liked a few drinks, and it's evident in his poems that he saw whiskey as a special symbol for Scotland. Whiskey comes from the Gaelic uscabal, which means water of life. the Scottish spell it whiskey. But if it comes from anywhere else, then it is whiskey with an E.
Now we have the quiz
answers
for this edition. Take it away, Roger.
TNF soundings. Features from across the UK.
Roger back now with the answers to our quiz. Joe Biden is the United States' second Catholic president. The first was JFK, John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Question 2. In what year was the film Grease released? That was way back in 1978. Question 3. Krona. The Swedish krona is the currency in Sweden. You'd almost think it could be the ABBA. They made enough money to own the country, didn't they? Question 4. Geoffrey Chaucer, the great English man of letters, is buried in Poets' Corner. But where is Poets' Corner? Well, that is Westminster Abbey. Question 5. The football team Juventus, known as Juve, is based in which Italian city? Well, that is the city of Turin. Question 6. Who wrote the William Tell Overture? Well, that was Rossini. And there's a joke there. I referred to it in the question. Yes. They say that somebody is a great sophisticate. You've got very sophisticated musical knowledge if you can hear that tune and don't think of the Lone Ranger. Question 7. In what year was Prince William born? Well, that was the 21st of June in 1982. And finally, the female star of the film High Noon and many others, including High Society, was Grace Kelly. The blonde bombshell, so beloved of Alfred Hitchcock, who later went on to marry Prince Rainier of Monaco, the late Grace Kelly. Question 8. I'll bet you got all 8 of those, didn't you?
TNS soundings.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sightless tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!